We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing?
Well, at least our owner isn't Robert Saba.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a great point. Obviously, some disappointing stuff from the NBA in terms of that. But we're talking about the Nets. We're going to jump into that. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. But Jack, where do you want to start?
Nick, we're going to start with just the brand that is the Brooklyn Nets. Now, Nate Jones, who is notorious on NBA Twitter, and I believe a Knicks fan. I'm not sure of his allegiances and such, but he sort of got Nets Twitter and NBA Twitter in general in a bit of a kerfuffle by putting a tweet out, and it was basically somewhat besmirching our beloved Brooklyn Nets. I'll go through it just so people have the context who might not be on Twitter and the like. The Nets have the most uninspiring big market brand in the NBA. As much as the Clippers get clowned, way more folks care about them nationally and locally than the Nets, even with KD on the team. Nets have never had a consistent enough roster in Brooklyn for people to latch on. Is this as cap as hell, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty big cap given that the Nets have pretty much dominated the national headline for the last 3 months of the offseason. Obviously, a lot of that is due to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but those guys are Brooklyn Nets. So again, that's tied to the brand. And obviously, they've been a headline for the last two seasons, given the star power they have and also all the drama. Like, at the end of the day, it brings attention, negative attention, but it's still attention. So I think, yes, this is cap. And I think also, like, the Nets fan base deserves more credit, especially the crowd, compared to what you see with the Clippers. And also, I saw some great points on Nets Twitter talking about, like, you don't see Clippers fans chanting at Lakers games and hearing them on TV. Obviously, Nets fans, Brooklyn Brigade, go to MSG, have those chants, and you hear them on TV. You know, that Cam Thomas game and all those different things we've seen happen, Nets fans are here and they make noise. So I think this is just somebody who's not tied to the Nets and obviously doesn't have a feel for the fan base. And I think it's incredibly difficult to have a great feel for the entire NBA fan base, but that's also why you don't speak on things that you don't have a feel for.
No, it's just opinions over facts. And yeah. And look, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But when it's wrong, and this blatantly wrong, you deserve to get ethered. This is via our guy, Will Jackson, who put out a pretty positive quote tweet in terms of the Nets being number four as a team in team merchandise sales behind only the Bucks, the Warriors, and the Lakers. The Nets themselves being top 10 in attendance, being above the Lakers, Hawks, and Raptors, and behind the Sixers and Bulls. So the Nets show up to their games. And in terms of jersey sales individually, Kevin Durant at number three behind only Giannis and LeBron James, and Kyrie Irving and James Harden at 8 and 9 behind Steph and Devin Booker. And then you've also got the game which we might not want to revisit, but we'll revisit it in terms of the Nets Celtics, was the most watched game that in a very, very long time. Let's just put it that way. Most watched game in a very, very long time. So if the Nets are uninspiring, if the Nets don't have a brand, I just don't see it. Like, it's just, and I put out a personal tweet just relating to it. I think the Nets brand is more global than it is local. And I think I'm reflective of that. I think our listenership is reflective of that. UK, Philippines, Southeast Asia, Australia, so many other places outside of America, Europe, have really, it latched on to the Nets, despite the fact that some people, quote, locally might not latch onto them. Yes, they don't have the history and cachet of a Knicks and Lakers team, but they have much more cachet than the Clippers. I think that that is just some semblance of bias. And everyone's entitled to have a semblance of bias, but you also need to back it up somehow. Like, how many jerseys was Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in those sales? Did the Clippers have any really high-rating home games? Kevin Durant by himself was having moments in during the season and stuff. And despite the fact that the Nets were a shit show for large portions of last season, they still put bums on seats. They're getting talked about on First Take right now. We're going to mention one of those topics. And despite the fact that it's in the midst and the heat of the cult of the start of the football season. So it just shows you that the Nets do have cachet. They do have pull, and to not acknowledge it is just blatantly false.
Yeah. I think like one easy point to look at, especially if you're arguing against the Clippers, is the Nets stars are bigger stars. Like, they're more notable. They're bigger, you know, celebrities across the world, like especially Kyrie and KD. Like, they're just two very popular basketball players. A lot of that's due to their skill set and their big scoring games and all that. But again, they're tied to the Nets and they're bringing relevancy to the Nets. And like, yeah, the Nets haven't necessarily been consistently good, but they're at least, you know, attempting to get in this space. And if they do win a championship or they have success over the course of the next two or three seasons, that's going to have a drastic impact because of the market they're in. You know, I think that's like the next step. And obviously they could be bigger if things have gone, you know, right in the past. But as of right now, I think they're pretty happy with the growth they've had in comparison to what they were when they started in Brooklyn. And obviously compared to what they were in New Jersey, where they were getting close to zero attention.
Yeah. If you're going to be not going to be good, quote unquote, then at least be relevant. And the Nets are as relevant can be. They are one of the most talked about teams in sports
media. Even at the
media.
End of last season when they were a play-in team, you know, for the last month of the year, it's like, oh, the Nets are the scary team in the East and all this stuff. And obviously they didn't live up to the hype. But again, like you said, Jack, they're still talked about and they've been talked about for over 2 years now, as soon as the arrival of, you know, 3 years really with Kyrie and KD being here and all the attention they've brought to this team, you know, good and bad.
Exactly. So look, I just wanted to discuss that because I thought it was, you know, just good to get the Nets homers.
Yeah, like I said, I thought it was a little disrespectful to like the fan base that's made like major strides forward and being noticed, especially even just a crowd at Barclays in general. And obviously last year wasn't the best season, but there's still always moments that really pop off and compared to what it was like early on and what it was like in New Jersey.
Yeah, Nets fans going to Philadelphia. You mentioned the Knicks game going to MSG and Drannan.
They went to the game one of the Celtics too, a good chunk of them too.
Exactly. So Nets fans deserve credit. The Brigade, Doug Barrag, all everyone else in between who shows the allegiance, buys the money, buys the tickets, buys the season tickets. You know, they deserve a heap of credit in terms of how they've turned this fan base around. And for us to be a part of that ride has been, you know, no short of an honor. I'm going to put it that way. It's been, you know, a real trip and a real journey to be a part of this fan base and at least feel like we're contributing in some form of fashion with our podcast. And I think we'll stick with sort of Kevin Durant, Nick, a little bit here, because Nets Twitter's been talking, or maybe NBA Twitter a bit more general, talking about how Kevin Durant is going to be received at Barclays Center, given everything that happened at this offseason with the KD trade saga and the trade demands and the trade requests, whatever you want to call it. What do you think? Obviously, you're going to be there, you know, semi-regularly. You're probably in the heart of it much more than I am. How do you think KD will be received at Barclays Center?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be cheers. You know, I don't see any reason to be boos. Maybe a few people in the crowd, maybe some of, you know, older people that didn't respect the trade request, or people, you know, most of the people that complain, like this was mentioned on Twitter, are ones that don't go to the game. People who go to the game want Kevin Durant on the team. They want Kyrie on the team because they're really fun to watch when you're spending money to go to Barclays Center. Like, you're seeing an all-time great basketball player. So just as a basketball fan, I think he's getting cheers. And then as a Nets fan, like, you're happy he decided to come back. He put the trade request to the side. Maybe it wasn't fully obviously his decision, but he's here, he's showing up, and you hope that, you know, showing him love is an ideal way to kind of want to make him stay. You know what I mean? If you start booing him, then you're creating more drama and more, you know, negative vibes for Kevin Durant. So I think it'll be cheers, and I think it'll hopefully lead to better things as it kind of goes throughout the season. And KD's never said anything negative about Nets fans.
No, the only way that it does go down a route that we don't want is if Kevin Durant, you know, reiterates his trade request during the season. Yep. And it's before a game, a big nationally televised game, and all the attention's there, then yeah, Nets fans might get a little bit salty and with good reason for that. So I think the nature of fans and me, you know, I'm probably evidence of this as much as any other, is that we are fickle. You know, yeah. We can change our minds on a whim because that's the irrationality that comes with sports fandom and fandom in general. If Kevin Durant leads us to a 11-2 start despite having an incredibly tricky schedule and he's in MVP contention, which he was for large portions of last season, and he continues to play at an All-NBA caliber, it's going to cure all. Winning cures all. It's the age-old adage. Like we need to win basketball games, and Kevin Durant is going to be a big part of that. So I can't see any form of negative criticism towards Kevin Durant live at Barclays or live in person, unless he were to bring it upon himself, like he did somewhat with how he handled portions of the trade saga. Portions of it, you know, could be attributed to other extenuating circumstances, but he didn't handle it perfectly by any stretch of the imagination. So I think the way the Nets fans are, they're going to be enamored with him. We are, I've said this a million times, we are so lucky that we get to witness Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant live in person and just play for our team on television and just be Brooklyn Nets. Like, there's a part of me that just still pinches myself. I'm like, Kevin Durant, one of the 10, 15 best players to ever play, is playing for the team that I follow and I get to talk about with one of my good mates. So, and I think that we need to think about that every now and then and just step back and go, God damn, Kevin Durant plays for the Nets. How cool is that?
Yeah, and again, like you said, Jack, it's an all-time great, and when this guy is on your roster, there's a chance that you have an opportunity to compete for a championship if the parts around him are correct. And obviously, that hasn't always been the case for the Nets, especially, you know, the last 10 years before KD was here. You know, there was aspirations to compete, but nothing really close, and they have that type of talent on the roster with him and Kyrie, so appreciate it. And like you said, and we've talked about this a lot over the summer, there's a good chance that Kevin Durant is the best or the most talented player to ever play for the Brooklyn Nets in their history. You know, moving forward, whatever happens, happens. But KD still played here, and he played at a really, really high level where he was at one point probably, if still not, the best basketball player in the world. You know, you're looking more in that Bucks series, you know, obviously two seasons ago, but still, like, that's a moment that won't be taken away. Like, the best player in the world played for the Nets, at least for that year or that segment of time.
Definitely. So look, just appreciate what you've got until it's gone, because I know that we don't want to go through a saga like that again, but who knows what could happen.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We'll get to some more roster chat, Nick, because I thought I'd throw this out to the timeline. You've thrown out some stuff to the timeline as well. And we're going to revisit little bits and pieces because this Nets roster still isn't complete. Given the nature of the contracts that have been given, Exhibit 10s, non-guaranteed deals, there is a lot of people aren't really in the mood for guard chat because obviously there is so many guards already on this roster. But I still think a point guard or a floor general to back up Kyrie in some sort of veteran sense would be valuable to this Nets team. And the two names that I came up with were Dennis Schroeder and Eric Bledsoe. Now, Nick, do either of those names make sense to fill out this roster, or should we go completely elsewhere and just continue focusing on the big man and just give it to Cam Thomas? What are your thoughts in terms of a preference between those two or elsewhere?
Yeah, I think you would love to add a veteran point guard, especially if you expect to have an injury. Obviously, Kyrie's not necessarily played, 82 games, and Ben Simmons coming off a back injury, and he's not really a true point guard, obviously. And after that, you're really not a ton of like full-time ball handlers. So I think you would like a guy that could handle the basketball, run the show, take care of some of those duties, especially if someone's out. I would prefer Eric Bledsoe. I think his skill set makes a lot of sense, given he can, play great defense when he's super locked in, obviously not in his prime anymore, and will give the Nets a driver, somebody who can create a little bit, obviously three-point shot, inconsistent, but I like the tenacity he could bring to the team. And obviously we know the relationship Kyrie and Dennis Schroeder have. They don't like each other. Kyrie was upset with him in the past. Obviously that could be pushed under the rug, but also he wasn't great for the Celtics last year. They played a lot better after they moved on from him. So, well, I wouldn't be surprised if, that was a reason a lot of contending teams didn't look at Schroeder, just given how he isn't necessarily the most successful role player. Obviously, did have success with the Lakers a couple seasons ago, but I think Bledsoe would be a better fit with this roster.
You can make an argument for Dennis Schroeder. I will back up all those thoughts on Eric Bledsoe. I just think that he could be a nice sort of complementary piece, which is what I think the Nets need to focus on. Whereas Dennis Schroeder probably, if we're talking about like the buckets lineups, like in some of our lineup episodes in those two parts, he'd fit in pretty goddamn nicely into one of those. Given what he's been doing at EuroBasket, where he's averaging 20.2 points per game and was key in scoring 26 points and eliminated Giannis and the Greek team. So he's been balling out. And Mark Stein has reported also that he expects Dennis Schroeder to be signed somewhere. Where that is, it could be Brooklyn, it could be somewhere else. I'm not 100% sure. And in terms of his background, Nick, the history comes from around late season 2021, Dennis Schroeder called Kyrie or used the N-word in front of him, and a lot of people like got mad at Kyrie. So it's like, why is he angry at that? Kyrie, and then Dennis Schroeder backs it up saying he's never going to wear Kyrie Irving shoes again, despite the fact that he was wearing Kyrie Irving shoes when that confrontation happened.
Yeah.
So there is beef there, but beef can be squashed if it relatively quickly. I'm sure it's happened plenty of times in the history of the NBA and could probably happen with the Brooklyn Nets, sooner rather than later.
Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook.
Patrick Beverley, Russell Westbrook, Steve Nash, Sean Marks, and Kevin Durant. There's a little bit of beef that I'm sure has to be squashed or has been at least partially. So who knows? But I think either of those names.
Look at that too as a negative thing too, is like, would you want to add the potential of more drama to the team that already has potential of plenty of drama?
Speaking of drama, Nick, I've gotten, I think every single person in my mentions whenever I speak about roster construction speaks about the Nets adding a big. And one of those bigs is DeMarcus Cousins. We've spoken about him a little bit. I think now that we've spoken about the guards, and were there any other names that you think are worth bringing up in that form, Nick, before we get to the big man sort of talk?
Not anyone that's a free agent. Maybe, something on the trade market we could discuss another time. But as of right now, I think in the free agent market, they're probably the guys. And if you're not adding a guy of that caliber, then there's probably no reason to really add one.
No, I agree with that. Now, we'll get to the big man, where DeMarcus Cousins is the hot name from everywhere on Nets Twitter, including our guys at Nets Kingdom. Nick, can you talk me out of DeMarcus Cousins? Because I've been a bit of a fan myself, given his strong relationship with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, given their time at Team USA. Some people are saying that he was loved in Denver and such, but I heard conflicting reports about the fact that his time didn't end well there. Now, you spoke about volatility and adding to the locker there. Is DeMarcus Cousins basically, do you think that he's worth adding? Would you rather, I guess hypothetically, on a take both of these guys against the world, Dennis Schroeder or DeMarcus Cousins, who would you take out of those two, given the nature of their volatility occasionally in locker rooms, at least at points in time.
Yeah, I think I would take DeMarcus Cousins because of his skill set. You know, you could talk me more into that in terms of what he could provide. But obviously, like you said, there are question marks with the locker room stuff. And also, he's just not a good defender. He doesn't move well. Even when he was, you know, good athletically, he wasn't a great defender. So I think that's always a concern with him that makes him an issue. And his three-point shooting, as we talked about in the past, it's good enough for a big, but it's not anything special. You know what I mean? It's enough to maybe get a little attention out there, but it's not going to put fear in the hearts of opposing teams. And again, he's probably a guy that can't play postseason minutes. So, you know, I think what the Nets are doing with their roster in terms of trying to find guys that fit and see what they can do, and then they have those non-guaranteed on a couple guys, they could always cut somebody, pick somebody up later in the season when there's a buyout, or potentially make the trade. I think if they were probably going to sign one of the veteran, you know, centers out there right now, they probably would have already done it. You know, so I don't necessarily expect them to add anybody before training camp in terms of, you know, a vet name like DeMarcus Cousins or Tristan Thompson or somebody like that.
No, those are the names that we've discussed on previous podcasts. And I think that they're giving themselves some wiggle room and flexibility, as you alluded to, which is a good thing. Yeah. If they were to sign someone, I would like DeMarcus Cousins. I just think that, you know, talent.
You'd rather miss out on a big than miss out on a wing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And look, is that wing Carmelo Anthony? Look, I don't know. I don't think that either of those.
No, even just trying out like Utah and Markeith. Like seeing, seeing if those guys can play good enough basketball to contribute or fit on this team. And now you have the flexibility to potentially let one of them go if you don't like their skill set, where there's always going to kind of be this quote unquote serviceable big market. It's not like anybody out there's, you know, going to have a giant impact in the postseason.
No. And look, I'll advocate it again. I did on whatever podcast, you know, we've done a lot of these things. Blake Griffin, just keep him, keep making the phone calls, keep sending the texts. If Kevin Durant can mend bridges with Steve Nash and Sean Marks, then the front office, the coaching can do the same thing with Blake Griffin. Cause I think that I'd probably rather Blake Griffin than DeMarcus Cousins, given the sort of role player nature that we've sort of spoken about and the malleability to just fit out there. I think I trust his three-point shot as much, if not maybe a little bit less. I think DeMarcus Cousins has probably got a little bit more in the tank and is a truer big. But I think Blake, you know, takes the charges. He's a bit grittier. And the way that he sort
energy
of
plays.
Yeah, the sort of development into that as a role guy, despite being a superstar for many, many seasons in Detroit and Los Angeles, is something that I think DeMarcus Cousins is sort of like Russell Westbrook in a way, where it's just like he still thinks he's like a superstar, and he has superstar talent. I'm not doubting that. But I think that the role player mentality could be more valuable for the Nets. Now, I think if you're talking about Tristan Thompson in that realm, give me DeMarcus Cousins any day of the week. But, you know, I'll throw a few names out there, Nick, and we can discuss any of them if you think they're worth talking about. You can give your thoughts on Blake Griffin as well. Al-Farouq Aminu, I'm not talking about Enes Freedom. Cody Zeller, Dwight Howard, I don't think is worth talking about. Greg Monroe, I don't think is worth talking about. Willie Cauley-Stein and Hassan Whiteside. Those are names that have been mentioned, some that haven't, on Nets Twitter, as well as, you know, Nets social media, Reddit, and the like. Any of those names that you wanted to discuss?
Not really. I think
let's move on then to the next topic. No,
we can talk. I mean, Blake, like you mentioned, I think there's some things about Blake, but again, like we've mentioned in the past, I'm not sure that he would want to come back to Brooklyn. Maybe they'd have to, like, there's an injury and they try to convince him to come back. Cody Zeller, we also mentioned in the past, he'd be a guy that I think would be a nice add because he could just sit at the end of the bench. You don't need to play him. He would just be a guy that's happy to be probably on a team and not necessarily need to fight for minutes, but gives you, you know, that traditional backup center. Tristan Thompson, obviously, we think that he's washed his, and that I just saw that video of him missing like 8 layups in a row before the Bulls game. So that was a terrible taste to leave. Dwight, obviously, skill set doesn't really fit at all. I've never been a fan of Hassan Whiteside. Obviously, he had a better season than probably what people gave him credit for last year, but still, I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't think any of these guys you need to go after because there's always going to be someone around this level available, where it's more so you want the flexibility if someone else becomes available, be a buyout or trade market. So that's how I feel in this free agent center market.
Totally fair. We'll get to the starting five, Nick, because the Nets, as they currently stand, you know, the East in general is going to be stacked. Now, I'll go through opposing teams before. You know, if you want to listen to our thoughts on the starting five, check out the lineups episode. We dived really deep into that.
Two parts, exactly.
Boston have Marcus Smart, Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, Robert Williams. Milwaukee have Drew Holiday, Grayson Allen, Chris Middleton, G.A.? Who's G.A.?
Giannis.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. I was just like, who the heck is G.A.? So I'm going by a tweet from Hoops Empire. And Brooke Lopez. Philadelphia, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, P.J. Tucker, Joel Embiid. Cleveland with Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen. Miami with Kyle Lowry, Victor Oladipo, Jimmy Butler, Caleb Martin, Cody Martin, one of the Martins, and Bam Adebayo. And the Nets, we think, will have Kyrie, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons, and Nick Claxton. Sub in Royce for Clax in where you see fit. Where would they rank, Nick, out of the six teams that we've been discussing?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to kind of do this exercise is try to like eliminate options. So I would say Boston probably has the best starting five. You know, I think that's, you know, just the most talent, and we've seen what they can do. And obviously there's a chance that Brown and Tatum both get better this season. Marcus Smart's going to stay around the same. Maybe Horford takes a minor step back. Robert Williams should be a little bit better as well. So I think it's pretty fair to probably put them at number one. I think I'd put the Heat at last. I think I'd say that they'd be in the bottom. And then now I think it starts to get tough. You'd probably put Cleveland fifth, right? Like,
I think that I'm lower on Philadelphia than a lot of other people. I just think that they're old.
It's just that Joel Embiid is so much better than anyone in Cleveland's lineup. I guess, yeah, you're right. It's hard to say because what's James Harden?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, look, James Harden could be anything, and he's throwing cakes off boats, and he's hanging out with Travis Scott and our guy Kevin Durant. But, you know, is Tyrese Maxey going to make a leap? Yeah, he's been playing really, really well, you know, and his maturation is showing that. P.J. Tucker is 40 years old and, you know, still doing things that P.J. Tucker's always done. And Tobias Harris might be underrated sometimes or overrated. Depends on the month or the week or the time of year. So I would put Cleveland above them just because of the collective. And I think Mobley is just awesome. I love Jared Allen. We love Jared Allen, obviously. And Garland and Spider. And I think that their growth is going to be good. And I think Philadelphia probably made more for postseason basketball, given their age and Joel Embiid's going to miss games and stuff like that. But I think you can make a pretty credible argument that the Nets are the third best starting lineup, or equal third with, you know, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, those sort of three teams. As you alluded to, I agree, Boston's probably the best. They were the ones that made the Eastern Conference Finals. Jason Tatum's still getting better, as is Jalen Brown, as is Robert Williams. And then you've got the steadiness of the Defensive Player of the Year in Marcus Smart and Al Horford, who will probably maybe take a little bit of a dip. Sorry, Celtics Lab fans and every other thing, and for underrating him in the postseason. But I think Brooklyn have a credible argument to be the third best starting five.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if you did it in tiers, you'd have Boston in their own tier probably at number one. Then I think in the second tier would probably be the Nets and the Bucks. And then after that, I think the third tier would probably be Sixers, Cavs, and Heat.
Yeah, and I think it's just about like, well, is Giannis Antetokounmpo so much better that he makes up for Brooke Lopez continuing to age and coming off injuries, Grayson Allen's serviceableness?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say Lopez is better than Clax, like consistency-wise, you know, what we've seen. You look at, you know, Ben Simmons versus Drew Holiday. You know, I think Drew would get the nod because he's been more on the court. Kyrie and Middleton, you know, if Kyrie's on the court, that's a pretty even battle. And I think Kyrie would probably get this maybe nod ahead, but obviously Middleton's a better two-way player. And Giannis is probably an inch ahead of KD at this point in time when we're recording this. And then Joe Harris, I would say, is better than Grayson Allen too. I think he's more consistent, but Grayson Allen, you know, is probably a little bit better defensively, but also he's a dirty player, so I don't want to give him too much credit.
I think that Grayson Allen has been better in moments, but I think Joe Harris is
more
better
consistent.
Over,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just that Joe has flash in the pan brain farts and such. So you sort of talked yourself into, and me into, Nick, that Brooklyn are essentially, you know, as good as any of these teams in the East. And I think that a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. A lot of people have question marks about this team. But if the Nets starting eight players stay relatively healthy. And obviously, there's going to be games missed here and there. There's going to be games rested here and there. The Nets should be a 50-plus win team. And again, we'll get into that in season preview stuff when we dive super-duper deep. But as they rank, as you said, they're in the top tier of Eastern Conference teams on paper. But as everyone says, games aren't won on paper.
Yeah, and they are, you know, pretty deep on the bench in terms of playable players and guys that can fill in if they have injuries. So, you know, they're suited to be pretty good. And I think the difference between, if I just wanted to give a final mark, it would just be like whatever big three is playing better between the Nets and the Bucks, who has the better starting five, you know?
And that's where Simmons comes into and is probably the big factor in all those three things. KD and Giannis, you know, those two are top tier NBA caliber players. Kyrie, when he's out there, is obviously incredible. And Middleton is incredibly serviceable, as is Holiday. But Ben Simmons is the sort of wild card that can take you to easily being one of the best teams in the NBA, let alone the East. Or if he's unavailable, he's not fit mentally and physically, then the Nets just have a big two and a collective of role players, which is still pretty good and would probably be as good as Miami and maybe compete with the Cleveland or Philly on their day. But you know, there are some other players, Nick, as you sort of put out a couple of weeks ago, that could have big seasons for Brooklyn and take them as role players and keep them in the contention for a championship. And those four players, you asked your timeline, and it got quite a bit of responses, which is why I want to bring it to the podcast. Out of these four players, TJ Warren, Seth Curry, who's that third player? I didn't even see
him. Royce O'Neal.
Royce O'Neal. It's not loading. It's not like the half photos to me on Twitter.
And of Claxton. Course,
yeah. And Nick Claxton, Clax City. How would you answer your own question, Nick?
Yeah, I think the obvious answer in this situation, you would hope, who would have the biggest season would be Nick Claxton, you know, given he's really the only starting caliber big on this team, the only big that you really want to see playing, you know, 25 plus minutes, obviously, if you're not considering KD and Ben a big. So I think Clax would be the guy that I'd want to see have the biggest season. Then honestly, after that, it becomes of kind of what's your preference. You know, with Royce O'Neal, to give you that really great two-way player that would fit and give you that complimentary piece next to KD and Kyrie, and also give you another, if his defense gets back to what we know it can be, give you another really good defender where now Ben can lock up the number one guy, and now you have a great number two option to throw on their number two in Royce O'Neal. So that's something to consider if he's playing well. TJ Warren, if healthy and, you know, playing anything like he was, you know, 80% of the bubble, he's almost an all-star caliber player, like if he was able to maintain that. And obviously Seth Curry, if he's shooting lights out and really, you know, playing to the level in which he can play and stays healthy, he could be a six man of the year candidate. So it's like, I thought, you know, it was a tough question because of all the guys and what they could potentially do. But I think in my mind, just given the NBA and the roster issues with this team, I think I'd hope that Claxton could make that jump that you and I have talked about for the last 2 years. He hasn't consistently done it yet, but we've seen these flashes where he could be a really good defensive big in this NBA and even have, you know, probably a little bit more on the offensive end.
Yeah, we are such big Clax believers. We're loving the offseason that he's having. And obviously, he's shown in big moments he was pretty bloody good in the Boston Celtics series when he was out there for the certain spurts and such. And it's going to be about, you know, how is he going to be utilized alongside Ben Simmons if he does start, as we do predict. And, you know, is that a bit of a clunky fit? Maybe, but just maybe both of them find ways. Maybe there's some preseason and offseason and training camp stuff that could, you know, be a big factor for both of those players in how the team functions overall. But I'm going to make a somewhat of a case for Seth Curry, Nick, because I just wanted to relook at his stats as a Brooklyn Net. In 19 games, he played in 30 minutes. He had a 49.3 field goal percentage. He averaged nearly 15 points on a 63% effective field goal percentage, 53% from the field, and 47% from three on 6.5 attempts per game. Are we underrating Seth a little bit?
I mean, I just said he could win Sixth Man of the Year, so I think...
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying the we collective, Nick, because it seems to me that he's sort of the token throwaway, let's throw him in a trade or whatever. But as much as he has his weaknesses, given his defense, given his size, the man is a really, really good role player.
Yeah, and he's a great complementary player next to stars, you know, offensively because of what he can do. Secondary, you know, a ball handler, can create a little bit for himself, has a mid-range game, obviously can shoot deep from three, and just has a lot of developed NBA skills. So I think, you know, that's where Seth can just find a way to shine. And he's also just a great guy to have when someone goes down, you know, if Kyrie's missing time. all right, Seth, we're going to need you to play, you know, 35 minutes for the next couple games and step up in that scoring load. And I think he's a guy that could average, you know, 20 for a week or something like that. Or he's also a guy that can just get super hot off the bench. Like, you're bringing Seth Curry in to go against backups, and now he has a chance to just be, you know, the second or third option on the offense to just catch those wide open shots and just knock them down, in which you can do at a crazy rate.
Exactly. Do you, how would you rank 2 to 4?
Man, I honestly, I really don't know. Like, it's a very tough question, and I don't want to give myself credit for it, but that's why I posted on Twitter, because I was thinking about it myself. It's just like, it's tough because you could talk yourself into so many different ways, and because of which each guy can do. And I think Royce O'Neal obviously is a guy that maybe you could talk yourself the most into because of what he could be defensively and what we already expect from a lot of the other guys. But again, like I said, you know, TJ Warren, if he can play 80% of what he was doing in the bubble, he would just add another huge type of offensive impact on this team. So, I think 1 through 4 on this is really separated just by your preference and, you know, who you think is going to get the minutes, who's going to be healthy, and who's going to fit next best to the stars. Or honestly, who you think is going to miss a chunk of time and someone's going to get an opportunity to step up in that role.
Before I get you to actually answer the question rather than dodging it, Nick, I wanted to throw a little stat out there. Getting back to my stats, Seth Curry and Ben Simmons in their time in Philadelphia, nearly 1,300 minutes with a net rating of 10.2 when they're on the floor together, including an offensive rating of 117.4. So those guys play good offense, as well as a three-point shooting of 40.5. So buckets are being made. Now, who's 2 to 4, Nick?
Yeah, so I guess I'm ranking this on who will have the biggest season and not who I want to have the biggest season. So, this is tough. Klax, I guess, like I said, I think I'll stick to my guns and put him at number one because he is, you know, the starting center as of today. At number two, I guess what defines the biggest season is really the question. And obviously I'm the one that created the question. Is it like your overall impact? Is it your production? I think, you know, Seth will be more productive than Royce O'Neal, but his impact could be greater because he gives you that two-way guy that can create a balance for the team. You know what I mean? When he's on the floor, you don't have to worry about him being targeted, where with Seth, that becomes an issue. And I think, you know, TJ Warren is such a mystery. I'll put him at number four just because we have no idea how healthy he's going to be, how many minutes he's going to play, what his role is going to be. But he could easily be the best player of this group by the end of the year. But if I'm just going off my pure expectations, I'd probably go, you know, Klax, Roy, Seth, Warren. What about you?
I was going to say the same thing, despite trying to talk myself into Seth Curry, because his skill set does overlap a little bit with Patty Mills.
And Joe Harris.
And a little bit with Royce O'Neal as well, because Royce O'Neal can shoot a decent three ball on a decent volume also. Before we finish up, Nick, wanted to shout out the Nets statement jerseys. A lot of people are a bit iffy about them, but the new black ones, now they're not the most creative things in the world, but they do look very clean. And
Sometimes
simple is good, and sometimes I'm going to try and find a way so I can buy them where I'm not giving money to Joe Tsai, because I'm still a bit iffy on that guy, and if there's a way I can, you know, go around the wings a little bit. But they are looking good, and I'll be finding a way, like the Mr. Whammy and Mrs. Whammy, finding a way to cop some of that merch. The Nets continue to do some good things with it, but maybe in the future we'll get the white Basquiat's and a bit more creativity. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Like you said, I think they're super clean. Definitely look better in the graphics than what we originally saw of them, and, you know, in the video and stuff like that. That was pretty cool. But Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks everybody for listening. Check the buzz on all streaming platforms.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.